This is Jim Giles, and you're listening to Radio Free Mississippi. And joining us via Skype from Missouri is Mr. Alex Linder, who I'll say like it, V-Dare, and the way they introduced Pat Buchanan, he needs no introduction. Alex Linder needs no introduction. Hey, Alex.
Hello, Jim. Good to be here with you today.
Well, it's good to have you. Now, let me throw something at you that I just learned moments ago. Brad has got Skype now, and I have been following the thread at VNN, and I've been following the thread at Occidental Dissent, and I didn't think he was going to be on here. But he suggested just a minute ago that I could try him via Skype. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, that's fine with me.
Okay. Let me try him now. He said he has successfully got it installed because we have instant messaged one another. Let me pull that rascal up. Where you at? Where you at? Add to conference call. Brad, is that you?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, like very, very well.
Yes, big difference, huh?
Yeah, very, very good. You're not chewing gum, are you?
Oh yeah, I have to put that out.
Spit that stuff out, boy. We're on. This is professional. We're trying to compete with CNN.
Oh, well, I didn't know it was. I had no idea it was that loud. Let me turn it down something
yeah,
if I can.
You didn't realize how good Skype is. See, this is his first time, so.
Yeah, it's quite a difference.
Yeah, we'll cut you some slack on that. I've already got Alex on, and y'all really getting after it in those forums and threads. But it's just not the same as when you talk to one another. So let me say a few things, and then we'll go back to what I'm going to open this about, and that is homosexuality. Now, boys, this morning I have read and thought about homosexuality more than I have in my entire life. I mean, I didn't think things could get worse for white people because we've got some really sinister Jewish folks who are really sticking it to us in various ways. I didn't think it could get any worse. And then I found out that Brad has got a real compelling argument in regard to why whites can't really stick together in this North American thing. And then I find out we may, in fact, have homosexuals amongst us who would undermine potentially the entire effort. Now, in regard to what I've looked at, and I'll be honest with you, I've seen that queer straight facts at Alex's site. And honestly, this is my reaction to it up until it became an issue in this thread. I don't want to be around it. It just gives me the weebie-jeebies. There's a movie out there called Groundhog's Day with Bill Murray and Richard Dreyfuss. Have y'all seen that?
Yeah, I've seen it.
There is a scene where the insurance salesman, you know, he's repeating the day over and over again, and Bill Murray finally sees this insurance salesman one day, and he hugs him real tight, you know, like in a homosexual embrace. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, ooh. That's the funny side of it. Now, I'm going to let y'all get in here real quick, but in reading about this stuff, it's not funny. I had to look up a word that I knew was a bad word, pederasty. Did I pronounce that right?
Yeah,
that's correct.
That goes beyond spooky. That goes beyond weebie-jeebies. That puts a whole different spin on this innocuous-seeming alternative lifestyle out there. And I tried to get a homosexual fella on out there who's prominent in San Francisco, but lo and behold, he's been arrested for child pornography. Not too long ago. So, but in reading the various thoughts of these big thinkers, and there's some post in your forum, Alex, where those guys, I don't know who they are. Well, I do kind of know who they are because some of them have replied to my emails, but man alive, they can dominion of the English language. They've got it down real well. Now, I have broached this thing with homosexuality, and we kind of left off with Greg Johnson, which it was interesting after our last episode. He really got in there and said a bunch of stuff. And so having kind of laid homosexuality out there, I'm interested to hear y'all's viewpoint on it. And who wants to go first?
I'll let Alex go first on this one.
All right, Mr. Linder.
My view on homosexuality is it's not that big of a deal if it's private and they're not trying to organize and go public. Because if you want to chase down people in their own bedrooms, you're going to get a level of government intrusion that I don't like. But the minute they come out of the closet and they demand any kind of public respect, no, they can't ever have that. Because what they are doing is, at best, it's a private vice. But more often than that, it's kind of a sinister network of people. It does tend to pull into trying to seduce teenagers. And for that reason, it's very dangerous. But as a practical political matter, if there are fags who want to help with the white cause, I don't see that as a huge problem. I mean, you had Hitler calling Ernst Röhm back from South America to head up his essentially private army, and unless to head it up, then to build it up. And they are often people who live in cities who are very verbally accomplished, who are able to basically take on the Jews at their own level. And if they're like that, as Greg Johnson is, I don't see it as a problem. Problem in his particular case is he won't admit to it. And the people around him, I don't know them that well, O'Mara and some of the others. There may be other problems there, but you have to look at these things in a somewhat hard-eyed manner. Now, people think, when they think fags, they think, oh, they're all a bunch of effeminates. And we make fun of Johnson because he is somewhat like that. But a good strain of them is hyper-masculine. It's not effeminate. They're very hard, vicious, amoral people. And like it or not, that part is fit to do battle with the Jews. And we need people like that. And if you want to go with good, you know, you can take, oh, we want the good old family values, conservative religious people. Those people are basically not able to defend themselves in this world very well at all.
Okay.
If you think you're going to get white liberation through Southern family values people, I mean, no, you're not. Okay. You're going to get Mike Huckabee's and that kind of cloud.
Brad, before you get respond, let me inject this, because the two groups you've identified, Alex, sissy Christians and masculine homosexuals, there's something I'm familiar with, not having been in the military, but on an athletic team, football team, called esprit de corps. And you undermine it big time if you have somebody in that unit that's not cohesive and all the other studs feel comfortable around. And I can assure you, other studs ain't going to feel comfortable around homosexuals. Now, these smart guys in your forum have called it seventh grade criticism.
And yeah, you're referring to Lou, I believe.
Okay, but
he was the one taking up that line.
All right,
he posted a number of different sites.
Okay,
all right. So I would just say that I hear you're trying to get that. That is a real political deal, but it's in conflict with a bat wielding gang member who you want watching your back. Now, I suppose out there, I kind of get a tint of what you're saying about some males are they're hardcore aggressive. I've seen that depicted in movies, but it's my sense, unless they're hiding it real well, that most homosexuals don't have the kind of masculinity that would actually be helpful in any kind of fight, be it political.
Well, yeah, but if they're not politically organized, it's not that big of a deal. If it's something that's just private, I'm saying that homosexuals, what you find when I was a conservative individualist writing editorials in college, writing opinions, the people who were the most vicious, hardcore, and really after me were the queers, and even more so than the Jews. What I'm saying is that why are Jews dominating whites? It's because they're more vicious, they're willing to go lower, and they're better organized. These are all particular strengths of the homosexual community, if you want to call it that. And if we get a portion of that coming to us, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. But now there are certain types of things that if they are advocating, obviously we can't accept that. But I think they should be if they're in any kind of a leadership, they should be open about it. I'm going to absolutely keep attacking Johnson until he admits it. We can't have dumb people and win. And if some of them have some of these vices, I can overlook it to some extent.
Brad.
Okay, Jim, I've been listening to this, and I have something that speaks directly to your comments here. First off, you said that homosexuals will undermine the spirit decor of kind of like a military organization. Well, the absolute first thing that comes to mind is that if you remember, I believe it was it late 2010, we had a vote in Congress on letting gays be explicitly homosexual in the military. And the first thing I would point out is that every congressman from New England, they wanted the gays in the military, and every single one of them voted for it. And in the South, because we have a different culture, that was overwhelmingly rejected. It was overwhelmingly voted down. So there are huge cultural differences between the South and the Northeast when it comes to the gay issue. And not just that. If you also look at gay marriage, for example. Just in this last election, you saw a gay marriage was approved in, I believe it was Maryland and Maine and Washington. The majority of white people went out in Maine and Washington, and they approved gay marriage. And if you go to Minnesota, you'll look and you'll see that there was an amendment up there to their state constitution, and it was going to define marriages between a man and a woman. And the majority of white people in Minnesota thought that that was a bad idea, that marriage shouldn't be between a man and a woman. Now, in the Northeast, I believe every single state has either some kind of either gay marriage or some kind of civil partnership between homosexuals. I know that New York recently, and they had a real big deal, that New York passed gay marriage. And as for all this goes for Greg Johnson, you know, like I've said, I've always stressed that there's huge cultural differences between white people. If you're an open homosexual in Alabama, you're not going to it's a non-issue, because if you get caught like Larry Craig guy in Idaho or Mark Foley in Florida, you have to resign because people don't accept that. I can't think of one single homosexual in the Alabama state legislature or in Congress or anything like that. If you go to Massachusetts, for example, the governor of Massachusetts is black, and they reelected their black governor, I believe it was in 2010, and he recently presided over the gay marriage of the Jewish congressman, Barney Frank. And taking this back to Greg, if you look out in San Francisco, homosexuality is more acceptable out there than racialism, than Christianity, than conservatism. If Greg is homosexual or bisexual in San Francisco, you got to think that would be an advantage to him with the white people out in San Francisco, because they're very different from us.
Brad, slow down just a bit. That's one thing Skype can't handle, is too fast.
I was getting worked up.
Yeah,
but
go
I'll
ahead.
Just, I'll
go
just
ahead.
Say
no, no,
that.
No. It's good to get worked up. There just can be a little bit of an overload. So you just got to be a little bit careful. But good to get worked up.
Yeah, I was just saying that homosexuality is perfectly normal in San Francisco. Christianity, for example, is a lot more taboo in San Francisco than homosexuality is. And if Greg wants to build a pro-white movement out in San Francisco amongst homosexuals in the Castro district or people who support gay marriage in Washington, then, like I said, I don't assume those people have the same culture as I do. That's not my position. And as far as I'm concerned, he lives in a very different culture, and he can do whatever he wants to out there. That's not going to fly here. I'll turn it back to you.
Well, you know, Brad, you've gotten into the Southern nationalism versus white nationalism, which this is a recurring theme of yours, but let's try to wrap up on the homosexuality just in it. As much as I can discern, there's something about Greco-Roman, and I believe it's Mr. O'Meara has suggested that male groups in Germany, Männerbund or something like that, was
a Männerbund is how it's pronounced.
Männerbund is a good thing. And then he's written this book about Negro and homo, and it's some kind of very clever analysis. He says that if you don't, they attack anybody, In other words, it gets white people to acting like a Negro. Alex, can you improve on that? I'm sure you can.
Well, I haven't read his book. I think he's basically just saying that you can have organizations of men and not necessarily homosexuals, and that is what has originally built civilization. And Greg Johnson will quote Camille Paglia saying, if it was left to women, we'd still be living in mud huts. And she's a noted feminist, and she's right in what she says. And we are too deferential to women. The concern to me is that as you have Jews try to invade white nationalism and people like Jared Taylor accept them and other people like Greg Johnson accept they're accepting them, when I say they should all be rejected on the face of it for that reason alone, Jews must be totally excluded. When you have these people with other agendas come into white nationalism and demand that they be accepted, then you're leading down a different path. So I look at it kind of two ways. I mean, you want to say we need to be tolerant of fags? No. You know, if a fag wants to work with us and whatever, they have to be pushing our agenda. Their agenda can't be to get us to accept faggotry because we're against faggotry. It's not a good thing.
See, that's
something that people may be born with, but that doesn't make it a good thing. And the second they try to organize to protect themselves, look, we're not going to chase you into your house, into your bedroom, into your closet. If you stay in there and shut up about it, we may wonder, but we don't really know. And then it's okay. But if you're going to make it front and center and we have to accept it, fuck you. You know, you're just another liberal, basically.
That's the rub, though, from my vantage point. When I assess homosexuals in general, that the natural thing, it seems, in trying to attract people to a political movement is not have any negatives. And that is a huge negative.
Jim, you're wrong. You're thinking in terms of ordinary Democratic pandering. And our cause is not about – this is why Brad's so interested in this electoral stuff. To me, it's basically irrelevant. It's the final outcome maybe, but it's not interesting. It's not the deep stuff is what matters. We're talking about our race and protecting it. And if these people who are smart, intelligent, sophisticated, and able, and at the top of society – look, social conservative – nobody wants to live in Alabama. Everybody wants to live in San Francisco. Now, why is that?
Okay, hold on
a
second.
Because these people, these fags at least, have climbed to the top of one of the most desirable places in the world. There's at least something there politically that can be learned from that.
But politically, you say that the electoral system has nothing to do with our fundamental values, but that's obviously not the case.
It confirms that we're not out there trying to sell our cause to people. Our cause is so self-evidently beautiful that it inherently attracts people.
Okay, let me ask you something. Why do they elect fags to Congress or to the state legislatures?
I don't know. Why does the South do it? The South elects people like Lindsey Graham. They just aren't open about it.
Lindsey Graham is not an open homosexual. He could never get elected.
It's a hypocrisy. People don't really care all that much. In the South, you have to pretend you're not a fag. In the North, you can be more open about it.
The majority of white people in states like Washington and states like Maine, they will go out and they will positively vote for gay marriage because they.
You may know this. I believe in the vast majority of cases where gay marriage has come up, it's been voted down. It was voted down in California. That's one of the most liberal states. I mean, California, for Christ's sakes, votes down gay marriage. But the courts are just going to throw it out. You're right. The Northeast is more liberal than the South, but you're still making too much of that difference.
California is two or three different places. Now, in the Bay Area.
Oh, sure. Yeah. At least two.
And the homosexuality is completely mainstream. Now, if you go into the interior parts of Eastern California, the rural parts, yeah. So you're not, when you talk about California as a state, it's not one place.
I've lived there three times in my life and traveled all over it and been there multiple times. I bet you've never been there once.
Oh, no, I haven't. But, I mean, we can look.
So you don't need to lecture me about what California is like because I know it firsthand. Well, you can lecture me about Alabama because I've only been there once.
I'm sure you'll agree with me that the majority of people, the white people in the West Coast and the Bay Area, approve of gay marriage. They approve of gays in the military. They have fag parades. That's completely acceptable there, whereas in other parts of the state, it's not.
It's more that way, yeah. I went to school with a lot of those people. A lot of them are elite WASPs, and they are extremely obnoxious. But here I'm going to go beyond what a Southerner would say. I will concede they're very intelligent, organized, thoughtful people. They're also very hateful, vicious, and contemptuous of anyone who doesn't share their agenda, as I did not and do not.
You got to
grant them their positive stuff as well.
Okay, I have traveled to San Francisco. I've eaten out in San Francisco. I have lived in San Diego, California, and I watched a IBMer when I was working in New York City die of AIDS in front of the entire branch's eyes, about 130 people in the New York Utilities branch office. This was back in the early days of AIDS. And I hear where you're coming from, Alex, in terms of forget the electoral politics. Let's talk about street fighting. And I still say this group of people is that they're not somebody I want to line up with. And if
Jim, I don't want to line up with them either, but it's like if my house is burning down and someone I don't like particularly like offers to help pass water, I'll accept it.
See, but that's the thing. My
orientation is how do we defeat the Jews? And to me, it says you need very smart, fanatical, persevering, dedicated, tough, rough people.
I get it. I've described you as a intellectual Dick Buckus, but being fanatical, I'm just thinking the homosexual who's got the bucket of water in his hand ain't gonna hit the target. More to the point,
he's dying of AIDS.
Yeah, no, but more to the point, these tough male homosexuals that you're talking about, I just don't see it. It's one thing to be tough with another homosexual. It's a totally different ball game when you line up against a heterosexual alpha male. Totally different ball game.
Yeah, but remember, most of this politics is veiled, deceitful, cunning type stuff, and that's where even the effeminates like Greg Johnson. And I'll admit, part of my disgust with him is I thought he was a hard ass homo, but he's actually like a flower shop type. But he is cunning and deceitful. And these are qualities that actually do work in politics fairly well, so I'll grant him that.
Well,
in any case, we don't control what he does, so we watch it, and if there's something good we can do with him, we do it. And if there's something where he's wrong, we criticize him, just like we would anyone else.
But his prominence and your fiddling with it, I hear what you've said, they need to be hosed down. If they don't stay down, they need to be put down. I read that, but there's also a grain of communication in there that says, well, maybe we can use them. Don't run them all off. Let's try to exploit what they can do. Number one, how large are their numbers?
Well, they're not 10% like they claim. That's pure propaganda. The more or less exclusively male homosexuals are about 1%. Or I'm sorry, maybe 1%, maybe 2%. Women, maybe 1%. And the women, interestingly, the average homosexual female has had more male sexual partners than the average heterosexual female, suggesting that lesbianism in many or most cases is basically it's kind of a function of being fucked up and just generally into drugs, promiscuity, what have you. Male homosexuality is a somewhat different thing, but yeah, it's only basically about 1% of the population that's male that's exclusively homo. That's why the Jews have been promoting this so hard, because in line with the Frankfurt School, they want to make white people promiscuous and loose and thereby reduce anti-Semitism, as they call it, in society. That's why it's promoted everywhere in the media. And they've built up the homosexual movement into such a huge force that it's just ubiquitous, their appeals. For promiscuity in general is kind of the basis, and then on top of that, they build all these deviants, you know, the transgendered and the lesbians and the homosexuals, and they're trying to get people obsessed with this stuff, and it's ridiculous.
So if you knew some of your forum members were homosexuals, you would allow them to stay if they acted right?
I allow anyone to post to my forum who follows the rules. I don't care what race they are or what else they do, really.
How about you,
it's
Brad?
It's a matter of following the rules. I don't try to pursue them below the level of the rules. The rules are designed so that we can have a useful, valuable discussion if you follow them. If you don't follow them, then I ban the people. It's not about what race you are. It's about posters. But I make a very strong distinction between what's online and what's in the real world.
Well, the real world is where I'm trying to get. So,
we all are, yes.
So
in the real world, homosexuality would probably be like a plus, I would imagine, in San Francisco.
Well, I'm sure you guys are familiar with the Folsom Street Fair. This is what I mean about shit that should not be tolerated and ought to be gunned down in the streets. I mean, they have open fags walking around, painting each other's scrotums, jerking off out of second-story windows, while they got little kids, while this whole alley is ringed with cops. This is what plays out there.
Well,
and
see,
sites that show photos of everything I described, it's quite memorable if you look at it.
The profoundness of the depravity in what I've viewed this morning, they talk about Sodom and Gomorrah. That's a biblical term that I've heard.
Gomorrah. Sodom and Gomorrah.
Thank you. but in reading some of the details of all this stuff, I wasn't aware of all that that's going on, and the media, mainstream media, put such a pretty face on the.
Yes. Homosexuality is presented in the Jew controlled media as something that's fun and happy and peppy, as suggested by the term gay, which used to be an ordinary term meaning light, merry, happy in the 50s, and they repackaged it to represent queers. Now, homosexuality, we know, until 1972 is considered a psychological disorder by the relevant professional body. And why did it change? Not because the science changed, not because the condition changed, because there was overt political harassment from organized fags to change it and have it made into something normal as opposed to a disorder. But it continues to be a disorder. It's a serious thing. It's not some light vice.
I agree.
It affects a person's entire orientation to the world.
I agree, and that's why I look at this again as a team, a cohesive team thing. And I've had coaches that if there was something wrong, little things matter a lot. And so you're trying to squeeze talent out of them where a coach or I think a military leader would say, you're out of here. The risk outweigh the advantages, so you're out of here. We don't want you on our team. You're out of here. Period. End of discussion.
Jim, there's a fundamental, more fundamental problem. We don't have a team.
Well, the theoretical
team. Of course,
Grant's
a Southern nationalist. I'm a white nationalist. Greg is a cum nationalist. Let's call him. I mean, we're not on the same team. That's one of the biggest problems.
There's cultural differences between whites. There's a huge cultural difference between places like Massachusetts, where the governor, they will reelect a black governor who presides over the gay marriage of a Jew congressman, and San Francisco. Homosexuality in those places, whites approve of it.
I mean, the Folsom Street stuff is extreme, even for California. Most Californians do not think that stuff is cool. Only maybe a few in the Bay Area think that stuff is not way out of bounds.
Of course, we agree that California isn't the same place. There's three or four different big cultures there.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, fellas, I'm looking at our list here. Anybody else want to say anything else about homosexuality?
Not really.
I really don't.
All right. Let's go to white nationalism versus Southern nationalism now. And since Alex went first last time.
Jim, let me suggest a direction. Now, I know Brad is very interested in Catalonia and the secession. I know there was a vote yesterday. Why doesn't he lead with that and talk about the prospects for something similar to happen in America? That's what I would be interested in hearing.
All right. That's fine.
Okay. Of course, the last 2 days, I've written two articles about that. I thought that was a better way to spend my time than fighting with a lot of these people on these stupid forums. But in Catalonia, let me look up. They just had a vote on. Let me get back to the Skype thing. I hit off the wrong button, but they just had a major vote out there, and the four secessionist parties, I believe, they got like a 2/3 majority. And they're going to have a vote on the secession of Catalonia from Spain. Now, the reason this is so relevant to our own situation is that in October, the Spanish government had a vote, and they said that they were not going to give Catalonia a referendum on secession. And not only that, but the Constitution says that secession is illegal, and the Supreme Court has said that secession is illegal. Now, if that sounds familiar, that's pretty much what we have in the United States, but in spite of that, this movement has exploded. You had, in September, you had about 1.5 million people or something on the streets demanding secession in an area that's about a quarter of the size of Alabama. And so that put on quite a display, and so it's kind of forced the issue. And the reason this is so relevant is I think it shows that, if you, like you say, we always need a strip movement, and you got one in Catalonia for sure. You have like I said, a place that's about a fourth to a fifth the size of Alabama, and you got 1.5 million white people out there marching in the streets demanding secession. That's going to force the issue, and maybe we could force the issue in the same way here, in spite of opposition. We don't know. And all I've got to say is that this is going to go further. They're actually going to have the vote on secession now. This was what all the election was about, and so I would say that we need to follow that closely, because that might weigh in on some of these arguments about, oh, well, you know, maybe they won't let them secede. But all I got to say is, let's just watch what happens in Catalonia, and let's start researching that in greater detail and see what we can learn from them.
Alex?
Well, yeah, I'd love to see that happen. I've read a few articles about it, and like Brad, I'm following it myself. They say the president, I think, said he's going to give him the referendum within 4 years. Is that what you said, Brad? That's what I read. He said he was going to do it. It sounded to me like one of those things where they can very easily fob it off later. But Lord knows, I'd love to see it. I would absolutely love to say, you know, I'm a white nationalist. I'd love to see a successful secession movement in Texas. Absolutely. I'd chop my neck off and convert to baptism and try to sneak over the Red River if that happened. Mm-hmm. Expect it to happen, but would love to see it. And Brad can make it happen through his writing. That's wonderful.
I'm looking at an old email from a listener of mine a while back who hails from Eastern Iberian Peninsula. I referred to him as the Spaniard, but he was right in the middle of all of that. So it wasn't like I had not heard about it. But
it's just getting going. But, Brad, I'd like to hear you speculate on how a secession movement might develop in Texas, assuming you think that's the most likely state.
Well, I mean, of course, in Texas, like I said in that article I wrote today, we're going to have to go through, now that Obama's president, we're going to have to go through no telling how many times of raising the debt ceiling. And that's one of the things that happened over in Catalonia. They got such a huge debt, and they're paying off all their – and what's really blown this up is they see themselves as being like one of the economic engine of the country. And all their wealth is going to Madrid, whereas in our case, it goes to Washington, and it's being spent on all these. They look at places like Andalusia as being like indolent parasites that take their money and have ruined their economy. And I mean, I don't even have to tell you, that's pretty much, you hear the same rhetoric out of Texas about the national debt being out of control. You can see with the Fed printing and all this crap that that we could have a dollar collapse. We could have the economy could go back into a huge double dip recession, maybe even a deeper depression. You can have suppose California or Illinois or New Jersey went bankrupt, then states like Texas would have to come up, you know, pony up the money to bail them out. I mean, what you have going on over in Spain is the same thing you have is going on over in Greece. You have currency crisis, debt overload, the richer regions being asked to throw in their weight and pull out the weaker brethren, and they're not going for it. And you know, in tough times, when especially over in Catalonia, where you got something like, what is it now? They got 25-50% youth unemployment there.
Yeah, it's pretty similar to Greece, I think.
Yeah, and in such a situation, you could easily see a state like Texas saying, you know, we have culturally we have nothing in common with the Northeast people and the West Coast people that are plundering us, and we'll be better off on our own. And
Brad,
of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me ask you this question. It's not original. I saw Alex pose this question, and to me, it's so quintessential, Alex. Why do you think our government, Zog, whatever, who will not leave someone alone who's in a cave in Afghanistan? Why in the world would they leave Texas alone?
Well, it's quite a different thing to. Drop, I would say, a predator drone bomb on someone in the backwoods of Afghanistan or Pakistan, and to drop one on Texas when it's going to be all over the internet, and it's going to be, I mean, that would, if they used, they wouldn't even use violence against us. I mean, the federal government, they barely use violence against the people in Waco. I mean, or Ruby Ridge, that was a huge thing. That was considered a humongous mistake. And I believe there was another secessionist group or some kind of sovereign citizens group in Montana. And the federal government learned what happened from Ruby Ridge and Waco. And they didn't confront them. They didn't use violence against them. So if they want to go send in like predator drones and cruise missiles, I would just love to see the reaction. I would honestly love to see the reaction of them dropping a Predator drone like on a school or something in North Texas. If they did something like that, it would be on, and not just in the South. It would spread. It would like wildfire across the country. I do not think they could use violence on American soil. Even if you go back to the war between the states, for a long time there, you know, it looked like the country was split into three or four different countries. There was talk in the Midwest about the Midwest breaking off and forming a Northwest Confederacy, and New York City even considered seceding from New York. And Lincoln had to force the issue. He goaded us into firing on Fort Sumter to stir up patriotism, but he didn't just come out and use violence against the South. He had to goad us into it, and that's exactly how I think it would be here. I'll throw it back to you.
Well, the one thought that occurred to me as you're talking about seceding, what would be an example in your daily life that shows that people in any significant number are unhappy and are dissenting?
Oh, I think I've already mentioned this to you. I've seen, like, this gym I've gone to for 2 years. I walked in there a few days ago, and I knew something was up. Something was out of place, and the American flag that I have to walk by every single day is gone. It disappeared and hasn't come back. And I walk through, jog through town every evening. And after I noticed that happened at the gym, I went out and looking, and I noticed a lot of the American flags you usually see are gone. And I don't know how widespread that is. That's just in my local area. And no, I mean, people here are still furious about the election.
Jim, it seems like people are, for some reason, whereas in the 1860s it was more political stuff, it's more financial stuff today, or just tired of the government is so large and there's so much tax and spend, and it's going bankrupt because none of these people seem to A, either understand economics, or B, not be swindlers. I mean, someone said, oh, you know, cartoon I saw, we just printed $16 trillion and gave it all to these big banks. And the people who actually go out and work every day, earn money, have to pay for that. That is ridiculous. And you've seen on a smaller level, where was it? Somewhere in Atlanta, some of these white counties like north of Atlanta, DeKalb or something, are trying to almost secede from the black areas because they're tired of subsidizing them.
Alex, I've got and Brad, I've got the Catalonian on. Let me see if I can't. This might be interesting. We can get some direct feedback. I'm trying to bring him in.
Oh, great.
I'm sorry to have interrupted you, Alex.
No, go ahead.
I'm just working on. He replied to an email, and this man lives in Catalonia, or did.
Oh. Great.
It says Balearic Islands.
Oh, the Balearic Islands.
Mm-hmm. Don't you love Skype?
Oh, it's great.
Well, if you can't get him on, just ask him what the average Catalonian thinks about this.
I think I can get him on. Continue on. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Y'all keep talking. Let me work on this.
Okay. I was just saying, as an example of real world, very low level stuff, secession is these white districts around the country often trying to pull away from these black cities because they're tired of essentially funding them.
Oh, yes,
go ahead. Brad knows what I'm talking about in relation to Atlanta, around there, the counties around there.
Okay, hold on 1 second. I may have him. The Spaniard.
Hello?
Are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me, sir?
Yes, I can. Now, the Spaniard, we're going to have to come up with a different name for you here in a little while. Let me tell you, I've got Alex Linder and Brad Griffin on with me. We've been talking about the what's going on over where you live, but I very much enjoy you joining us. Can you tell us what's going on where you live now?
Well, maybe these people, great people you have there might probably know more about Spain and the current situation than myself. But from my perspective, as a pretty much anonymous citizen in Spain, in the Spanish state, I must say that the situation is pretty bad economically. We've been compared to Greece in many respects, and I think for better or worse, it's a bad situation. It might be good if you follow the philosophy that worse is better. But in the overall, we have great economical problems with economics, with the banks, and the unemployment, and of course the worst of the problems is that there is an ongoing program of genocide of the native European population. It is not necessarily a violent genocide, but it's a genocide that's being carried away. It's being implemented by massive non-white immigration and forced assimilation.
What's the particular nature of that? Is the national government just letting in Africans? Is it mostly Africans coming into Spain?
We have Africans from the north and northern Africans, Arabs, in the vast majority of North Africans that come here are Arabs, and also a lot of Sub-Saharan Africans, black Africans, and also we have a lot of Amerindians and mestizos from the South American continent, and a lot of Chinese people, and I think that's pretty much it.
How in the world are the South Americans getting up there? I've heard that. It just seems so remarkable. It's hard to believe.
Oh, they are. I don't have the numbers, but they are. Their presence here is overwhelming, and they seem to hold a historical grudge against the Spaniards, because they feel that they were subject to oppression by the Spaniards, and they feel entitled to come here and take over this country because of what Spaniards did to them 500 years ago.
Well, which country are they coming from in South America primarily?
Probably Peru.
There's a lot of Peruvians. There's a lot of from Ecuador and Colombians, also a lot of Colombians, and I think that those are the main sources.
Well, now, are these illegal aliens or legal aliens? I don't know. Are they mainly found in the south in Andalusia, or to what extent does that affect Catalonia and the movement up there? I would think there'd be fewer of them there, or maybe more because it's richer. I had the impression it was more of a southern Spain type thing, but is it through the whole country?
It's pretty much the whole country. In certain areas of the country, you might find that there's a certain ethnicity that is the majority there. For example, in the Catalonia, they seem to have lots of problems with Arab immigration. And for example, in my city, which is in the island of Mallorca, is in the Balearic Islands, southwestern Europe, Mediterranean region. We have I live in the central city, and we have all the different ethnicities mixed here, sharing space.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Catalan, Brad and Alex are arguing over white people in North America. Brad's position is the South is separate, has a different ethnicity, different culture, and therefore we have nothing in common with whites in the North or the West or the Midwest. I'm just curious, in your situation there, do you want? Would you like to secede with everyone, or just people of your ethnic type culture?
Well, the situation is might be a little complicated. I'll try to sum it up so that you can understand and not be too boring. Okay, let's see. We have different nationalities in here, and by the way, I should start by being honest and saying that for historical reasons and political reasons, but mainly historical reasons, many, many pro-whites in Spain are unionists. They are in favor of a unified Spanish state and a unified nation state, okay? And there's a few pro-whites, like myself, that are in favor of secession of the different territories which used to constitute different nationalities, the Catalonia being one of them. So I'm in favor of secession. But that being said, I must admit that there's a lot of anti-whites who also favor Catalan secession.
That's true. There's a left-wing party, I want to say the Republican Left, that we've been following that seems to have done pretty good in the elections over there. It's a secessionist group.
Exactly. Exactly.
But bottom line, who do you want to live with? I've heard the term Balkanization, just break it all up, or consolidate whites who may be a lot different, but at least they're white. You, which one do you want?
Well, if I'm forced to choose between a unified Spanish state, such as been the case lately, and it will be secured as a wide homeland for native Europeans, I would support that. And so for me, secession is an inner problem which complicates the situation even more. But I would be satisfied, not completely satisfied, but I would accept it if the price for white survival would be a unified Spanish state. But like I said, there's a lot of anti-whites who also support a unified Spain. So we have both sides of the coin in both parties. Both secessionists have anti-whites, and both unionists are also anti-white, have some anti-whites.
Here in the South, there's some of us, we think that we see parallels between, for example, Texas and Catalonia. I've read that Catalonia is the richest region of Spain, and here in the United States, Texas is one of the richest states in the country. And there's a lot of people in Texas who feel that They're paying into the government is against them. The government is against their culture, trying to repress their culture. And the government is taking their money and they're funding it to they're giving it to illegal aliens and to blacks and other minorities. And there's a growing feeling here in Dixie that what we should do is that we should secede from the United States and we should get out from under. And our problem is our problem goes beyond the whole white issue, because here in the United States, as you have in Europe, you have different ethnic groups, and in the United States, there's so many different ethnic groups, it's ridiculous. Whereas in Europe, you have more homogeneous countries, and so here in the South, we're thinking that a lot of people here think that our ethnic group needs to secede from the United States and form our own nation state. So, throw that back.
Mr. Catlin, if I understand what's going on over there, though, you actually have representatives who share your viewpoint in regard to seceding, correct? Y'all have had a vote, and it's much further advanced than where we're at here in the States.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm not that enthusiastic, and I wrote that in on my Twitter account. That I would vote for a certain separatist party, which I didn't, because they have anti-white policies. So, yeah, I do support secession, but not at any price, not at any cost. I support secession if that guarantees the survival of the native Europeans of that particular ethnicity.
Mr. Catlin, are you following what's happening in Greece?
What I know is that they have very similar problems than we have, and it came to my attention that there was a certain far right, so-called far right, or even well, anti-whites call them neo-Nazis who gain some seats in the government. I'm not sure
Golden,
about that.
Golden Dawn. Is there a Golden Dawn in Catalonia?
There is a Golden Dawn in Spain. A party was formed in resemblance to Golden Dawn. I don't know if they are directly linked or simply inspired by them, but yeah, there's a Spanish Golden Dawn, if you will.
And have you seen any report of this group in Catalonia?
No, I have not.
Mm-hmm. There's in Catalonia. It's an interesting situation because it seems that much of the left in Catalonia supports secession, and then you got some more right wing parties.
Who's still here?
I'm here.
Brad must have hit a button he wasn't supposed to. He's new at this. he dropped real quick, so it sounds like that's what happened. Let me see if I can't get him back in. What's the temperature there like, Mr. Catlin?
Right now, it's a little cold. It's dark night right now in here.
A little cold. It's a little cold here in Mississippi.
Oh, okay.
Brad, I'm trying to get you in, boy. Conference call.
By the way, I'm very happy to hear you again, Mr. Giles.
Well, that's a funny turn of events. I always enjoyed your calls in the past. You cheered me up. Wasn't sure who exactly was listening, but it was good to hear you. You speak even though your English is not perfect, you enunciate better probably than I do.
Well, thanks for the compliment. I do what I can.
Come on, Alex. You used to be a kind of a journalist. Ask Mr. Catlin a question.
Okay. Well, are you in the? Did you say you're in the Balearic Islands or in Catalonia? I wasn't clear on that.
I live in the Balearic Islands, but since I support Catalan nationalism, I'm for the reunification of the.
Oh boy. Who can hear me now? We got it going all kind of ways down to Montgomery, Alabama, Missouri. Heck, I'm going to just hang up on everybody and reestablish the whole thing. Okay. Hang on, boys. I'll be right back with you. What we need here is more practice. All right. All right. Let's get Alex back. Alex?
I'm here.
Yeah, I'm just reestablishing the conference call. Mr. Catlin?
Yeah, okay. I'm here.
Okay, I'm just reestablishing the call. I think I'll get it now. You know, the thing is, when I go to add this third call, it says add to call, add to conference call. But if I do that, it puts everybody else on hold maybe. Wait a minute. If you call Brad Griffin, your current call will be put on hold. Y'all just hold what you got, and I'll try to get us all three back, okay?
Okay. Okay.
Brad?
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay. Mr. Catlin, can you hear Brad?
Yeah, I can hear him.
Alex, can you hear it?
I don't see Alex.
Call on hold. Dang it. How do you add to conference? Alex?
Yes.
Can you hear Mr. Catlin?
Hello, hello.
Yeah, there. Okay.
Okay. All three of us, all four of us are back, right?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Sorry about that. Brad, I think you hit a button you weren't supposed to, did you not?
I'm not sure. It just said it was lost or something.
Okay.
I don't know.
Anyway, we're all back. Alex, you were asking a question of Mr. Catlin about where he lives.
I was just excited to talk to someone from the Balearic Islands. It's very new to me. I couldn't remember where they were. I actually Googled it up, but maybe he could describe for listeners who might not be sure where that is. And maybe we should say, this is where Catalonia is. This is where the caller is calling from, just so people have the context.
Yeah.
Well, strictly speaking, Catalonia is an autonomous region in the northeast of the Iberian Peninsula, and the Balearic Islands are in the southeastern part next to the Iberian Peninsula. It's a group of islands. Mallorca is pretty known because of tourism, but the Balearic Islands are also an autonomous region of Spain. So
they are also under the consolidated central Spanish government. I know Mallorca is a very big partying tourist destination from Germany, right, and other European states.
Yes, I was going to mention that.
Yeah, so these are big islands that are like what, a couple hundred miles southeast of Catalonia. Catalonia is a big triangle shaped province of Spain that you said is autonomous. Does that mean something slightly different in Spanish than in English? What does the autonomy mean if we're talking about secession?
They have home rule, I think.
Okay, what's that mean though?
There's a certain degree of things that an autonomous region is independent to do if they so wish, but they want a complete independence. So the different autonomous regions were not were an attempt to satisfy the different sensibilities, the different coexistence of the diverse ethnicities, which conform the Spanish people.
So kind of a lesser way of doing what they've done pretty successfully in Switzerland, maybe like a confederation, but a little bit more consolidated than that. But nevertheless, granting a fair amount of powers to the different regions, which have different types of people, I guess.
Yeah.
But now they want more, and they actually want to go all the way to full and complete independence and sovereignty, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
Now I believe I want to say that. I believe Catalonia has home rule, and I believe the Basques do. I'm not sure about that, but I believe one of the big deals about that is that the Catalans and the Basques have control over the public school system and can teach people their own language, if I'm not mistaken.
Mr. What's the relation between the Basques and Catalonian geographically and politically?
Okay. Let's see. The Basque, the region that is called the Basque country, is in the northwest of the Iberian Peninsula. Catalonia is in the northeast, and the Basques are very, very different from the Catalans. The Basque language is I think it's pre Latin. It predates the Latin the
Yeah,
the,
yeah.
The
so
spread
it's,
of the
it's
land.
Before the waves of Celtics and Germanics swept over Europe,
yes,
right? These are the original European people, right?
Pre-Indo-European.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Mr. Catalan.
So they are autonomous like the Catalonians, and there's no particular relation between them, I suppose.
No. With the course of the time, we cannot deny that there was a lot of movement between and among the different Spaniard ethnicities. So we could admit that there is very much mix between us.
Yes.
But in spite of it, our strongest sense of ethnicity is related to the language, above all to the language.
And Mr. Catalan, just so I can figure out the different ethnic groups there in Spain, who are the bullfighters?
The bullfighters, I'm not really sure about the origins of it, but usually, bullfighting is associated with the unionist approach.
When I was in Madrid, I went to a bullfight, and they were passing around a flask of wine. And I actually drank it. I wouldn't do that today, but back in the early 80s, I did. Are you a fan of bullfighting?
No, actually, no. My father was very fond of bullfighting. My father was a big fan.
What would be the sport that Catalonians enjoy? If y'all aren't real big into bullfighting, what's y'all sport?
I guess football.
Soccer.
Soccer. Yeah, exactly.
Seth is here.
Mm-hmm. And are y'all soccer athletes? Are they? What race are they primarily?
The common players, they are Europeans. Native Europeans Spanish descent.
They're the white. World Cup winners and the Euro Cup winners too. They stomped Germany into the ground when a lot of people thought they were going to beat them. Well, actually, Germany didn't even make it past Italy. But yeah, they're all white, unlike a lot of the other European teams, right?
Yeah.
The world champs. Yeah. They've had a real dominated soccer, tennis, and really been on a roll last few years.
Yeah. That's right. That's right.
Mr. Catalan, I'm curious as to the mood on the street, the common person. Do they have a sense of dire times are upon you, or is it pretty much business as usual and no big deal?
Well, to tell the truth, the people is really, really angry and bitter because of the economy.
How angry?
Well, they are very demoralized and very, yeah, they're angry. They're bitter because they know that we have been screwed and that we have been lied to and laughed at in our faces.
Do y'all have a welfare community there where you live, where the government gives out money to people who don't have jobs?
Yeah, Spain, the Spanish state has been pretty much socialistic for a very long time. And universal health care and things like that are commonplace among Spaniards.
But in terms of, say, a particular group of Spaniards, is there a group that maybe engages in crime and they're unemployed and they just want more and more? Like, I mean, that's what we've got here in America. We've got inner cities of non-whites who live off government largesse. They prey on white people in general while being funded by our government. I'm just wondering, is there a similar setup there in Spain where you've got a bunch of non-whites sucking in revenue from the government, and then they turn around and attack white people in their spare time?
Well, yeah. For example, the village, I grew up in a little village, and when I was in my early teenage years, I was the most dangerous person in my village, and I was totally harmless. I wouldn't kill a fly, and I was the most dangerous in my village. So you can imagine, until I was 13 or 15. And now is we are experiencing the benefits of multiculturalism, and there's a lot of violence, killings, robberies, and all the beautiful stuff which comes from this wonderful thing that is multiculturalism.
Alex or Brad, do y'all have another question for Mr. Catlin?
Let me think here.
Do you foresee any prospect of a group like Golden Dawn arising to physically protect Spaniards from Africans, or is it not still yet that big of a problem?
There's a big problem, but we have been so brainwashed that is astonishing. To illustrate, many pro-whites are not accustomed to say that we are white. They would prefer to say that we are Spanish or we are Europeans and things like that. We have been so brainwashed to not to think in racial terms that it is astonishing.
Okay,
I had one other question. Do you also get a lot of the diversity? Maybe you haven't ever been to America. Do you get a lot of the diversity? Maybe you've seen some American TV, the diversity propaganda, the saying that, like, you know, Africans are Spanish too, all that kind of stuff that we even see in Finland. I guess that's everywhere through the European Union, I suppose. You do, huh? Okay.
I definitely have a question. How do you see this secession movement developing in Catalonia? And specifically, do you think that if they actually did vote to in favor of independence, do you think Madrid would use force against them?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they would use force. I don't think they would use force because I think the European community, well, this thing that is called the European Union, which is nothing but a tool for the new world order, they would push to stop any violence. That's my opinion, though. I could be wrong.
Mr. Catlin, I'm very grateful for you calling in. You made the program.
This is great.
I will be back in touch with you, and I wish y'all the best of luck.
Okay, thank you very much. And before I go, I just want to say that I'm very glad to hear you again, and I'm flattered of being of sharing space with these big names, because we have big names in here. Mr. Linder is a very big name.
Well,
thank you. I appreciate hearing firsthand accounts of what's going on in Spain.
Same
and there
here.
Once in my life, very briefly. It's quite interesting. I hope you'll call in again and give us more, because we certainly don't get much in the press over here.
Exactly. It's good to get direct reporting. There's been more news reporting in this broadcast than anywhere in the country. Mr. Catlin, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you very much to all of you. Thank you to Mr. Wallace, too, of course.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Okay. Good deal. All right. Gentlemen, do y'all have anything else to say about secession before we try to go on to something else?
Oh, that was a good exchange. I'm glad I called in and listened to that. That was very informative.
Hey, you don't get that every day, hearing from someone actually in Spain.
It's time.
Let alone the Highlands off Spain.
It's timely, no doubt. You know, we could probably do with just a tiny break. One thing, I don't have advertisers, but I'm going to let y'all stretch y'all's legs or something. I'm going to play just a little bit of music. You can kind of listen up, and we'll come back here no more than three minutes or so.
Okay.
Okay?
That's great.
Okay. We'll be right back.
All right, boys, y'all there?
Yeah, here.
Alex?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. You know, every topic out there is like it's like landmine. It's so controversial. But that's what we do, I guess, is dive into controversial stuff. So let's not flinch from taking on an issue that has been bantered about, and that is the issue of Christianity. And I'm going to preface it again with kind of my take on it, and then we'll let Alex go and then Brad. I'm going to play a song, not all of it, but it's going to go to Southern Christianity, and then I'm going to ask Alex some questions. Kind of establishes a mood. Now, Alex, me and Brad more or less grew up with gospel music. Going to church is kind of, you know, if you couldn't go to a country club, at least you'd go to church, and people would think well of you. And I've discerned the older people that I recall when I was young, the way they dealt with all the complexities of religion. Nobody really understood it. They just kind of bowed their head and went along with it. The ones that I admired most didn't get into the details. They just showed up and they were polite. And when somebody died, which they, you know, you have close family members who die, the preacher would pray over them and make you feel good. And a lot of things happened bad, and you know, especially in the South. And one way Southerners have coped is through our faith in God and Jesus. Now, I'm the first to admit the way they have shaped religion and Christianity today, they've totally refined it. You can't even recognize Christianity in the South from my perspective. I no longer go to church. It's totally different thing than I recall that from when I was a kid. But Alex, I've seen your hypercriticism about Christianity and in particular Southern Christianity, but this is an instance where I think you have bitten off way more than you can chew, because this stuff has been around a long time. And once upon a time, there were Christians like, I guess, George Washington. Certainly a lot of the founding fathers were Christians, and that didn't keep them from doing the right thing and not being sorry, no counts. So what's the deal with attacking Christianity, and do you really expect to win in that attack?
Christianity prevents white men from defending themselves. It instills a mindset and a mentality that makes them feel morally guilty for doing what is natural and obvious. It instills what I've called a double clutch in them. So, for instance, when you see a nigger, what's your first thought? It's not rhetorical, I'll answer it. Your first thought when you see a nigger, like say you're in a public park and you just see a nigger sitting there and a bunch of kids, you know, white kids playing, your first thought, that is a dangerous wild animal and threat to my community and it should be extirpated. Okay, that's what every single person instinctively feels about niggers. And what is it that prevents us from doing what we naturally want to do? Well, it's not just the law. Of course it's the law. Of course we would go to prison if we did what's actually indicated, but it's this Christian universalism that we're all part of, really deep down, of the same team, and it's immoral to do what is indicated by goddamn reality. I favor reality over religion, just like you. I was raised in the church. For Christian Science, it's a sort of a non-dogmatic
high-end, socially and financially cult, I would call it. But like I said, non-dogmatic. That's what's truly original about it, because it comes from that same northeastern territory that, as
that
Brad
Tom
will tell
Cruise?
You, spawned numerous vile, innovative cults. It also spawned Mormonism, and Mary Baker Eddy came out of that environment. But the point is, it's based in fantasy, and reality is whatever you want it to be. In their case, it's not political. It's more, you know, there's no such thing as disease. It's just a bad thinking on your part. You can see how that transfers into the political stuff.
What was your was your religion the Tom Cruise religion?
No. That's Scientology. Scientology. That's something totally different.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Christian Science, Mary Baker Eddy. They're most famous for not going to doctors, even though a lot of them do go to doctors. Almost all of them go to dentists and eye doctors.
Alex, certainly you recognize there are plenty of Christians out there who once upon a time thought totally different than the way they do today and acted differently.
Well, Jim, that tells you that Christianity isn't principled then. If they were one thing 50 years ago and they're the opposite today, they're not goddamn principled. Or at least there's nothing in them that cannot work equally well with pro-white and anti-white. Don't you see that? That's what I can't explain. The fact that Christianity, my position of Christianity, was always latently hostile to the white race. It just took the technology and the right set of people to operate it, to make that latency a reality. And that's what happened in the 20th century. Now, the Jews were, it's just like they say, oh, the church always dealt well with Jews. The church never dealt with Jews. Jews were in ghettos because the rabbis wanted it, not because the church wanted it. I mean, even the very, what was it? The Inquisition itself was started by a Jew who had come over to Christianity. Christians didn't pay any attention to Jews at all. They work with them and use them to tax farm white people. There's this thing, the first day Christianity was set up, it began as a bunch of clubs of people talking about Jesus, and it was deliberately across all social classes and across all races. So it's not and never has been and cannot be, from its very dogma and founding principles, pro-white.
Well,
it's universalist,
but
and our cause is not about everybody in the world. It's about one specific race.
There were plenty of Christians in the South that attended all white churches and were totally opposed to any sort of integration whatsoever.
I know, and that's not the case today. Today it's the exact opposite. Today,
not
says,
really.
Matt Robertson says the browning and racial mixing is the solution to America's racial problems, and he's the top Christian in the South today.
There was a very recent occurrence in a church where a black couple were supposed to get married. I believe it was in Crystal Springs.
Yeah, I remember that. But so what? That's some residual or racial prejudice. It's unprincipled. This is what I'm saying.
Well, unprincipled.
You got to have the principle, and you got to stick to it. And that principle is not in the church.
Well, that's like saying our Constitution is unprincipled. It's the way you apply it. I mean, the representatives and senators and the Supreme Court, they apply our Constitution in a way I don't think it was intended to be applied. But same with, you know, it's the practitioner, that it's not necessarily the Constitution or the Christian principles. It's the way it's applied.
Well, like I say, it's a mug's game, and that means it's for fools to dispute Bible verses, because the only thing that ever matters that was said about the Bible, the devil can cite scripture for his purpose. Anyone favoring any cause can find Bible verses to justify it. That's why it's not worth getting into.
Pragmatically speaking, though, I'm just wondering.
Jim, I wasn't anti-Christian when I started. I thought it was more or less a small thing. It didn't matter all that much. But now, you know, 15 years into it, I've seen very directly, this thing is an absolute poison. It is what is... The Jews are the main problem we face, but the reason that we can't deal with that problem is because of this mindset that has been raised up in us due to Christianity.
Why not?
And I guarantee I went to more church and Sunday school than 99% of the people listening into this, I would wager.
Wouldn't you be praising a Christian leader who came to the fore and said, enough of this race mixing, enough of this, enough of that, and God doesn't approve of this? I mean, it wouldn't be very hard for a new voice to come to the fore and say, you know, y'all got it all wrong. This is the way we ought to be loving God and acting like Jesus.
Oh, My answer is, why don't they? Where are these people? Well, there's 200 million, you know, whites, and probably 95% of them are Christians, and none of them are honest on race. So how can I have any respect or look to them with any hope?
It wouldn't be very hard, though. I mean, let the times get
It wouldn't be hard if they were principled, tough, resistant people, but they're not. They're mushy. It breeds weakness in people.
Well, a lot of
Christianity is a deliberate sop to the slaves in the left half. I know all those evil people who have good looks and money and are successful in life. You're going to get over on them. Not in this world. That would be kind of hard. But in the next world, you're going to be on top.
That's why
they're selling this garbage to these people, and they believe it because they want to believe it.
Well, a lot of Southern Christians, they go to church because that's all they've ever known. I know.
And look, they will come to the racial cause. They all want the social conservatism. We all want the anti-homosexuality and just basic everyday normality. Despite what Brad says, there's the sentiment for that is pretty much universal. It's throughout the Western world. We all want basically the same thing. Of course, there's little carve-outs like San Francisco. But basically, white people want pretty much the same thing. It's just the Christians can't supply it because they can't defend it, because they don't have the right principles.
Brad, you
need harder men who can defend it. And where did that happen? Well, it happened in NS Germany. And all those men were Catholic by origin, or most of their leaders were Austrian Catholic by background. But they knew that within the church, there's not enough strength and the right principles to defend the kind of society we want to live in. They realized we have to reconstitute it based on race. Race is more important. The minute they did that, by God, the church was after them.
That's the current
trend. Helping the Jews. Now, the Jews lie about it today and say the Nazis were the church aided the Nazis. But no, the church worked against the Nazis very much. And it will work against white racialism today very much.
Somebody,
if anyone actually dares to try to lead. And that's why it's not our friend.
The way it works in church, and I've gone to church enough, that you get a fire and brimstone preacher, and he gets on a roll about a certain issue, and all of a sudden you got people, they say, yeah, amen! And, you know, so all we need is new leadership. It's not, I just think it's stupid to attack
Christians. But Jim, churches and political magazines and political parties are set up as 501c3 corporations. They have to follow the federal government. The federal government, Rounder says this on my forum, the feds basically, the reason all these churches flipped on race is because the feds threaten their tax status.
That doesn't mean somebody can't get out
there
in the wilderness.
That's why you had them all switching over to multiracialism is good. They don't even believe it themselves, most of them.
I hear what you're saying on the 501c3, but that doesn't prevent somebody from getting out in the wilderness and saying, by God, I really believe. I mean, these guys, they are some of the best orators around, and all it takes is for the right one to come along. James Robinson, I remember I used to go to his revivals. Man, you talk about an orator. Whoo! They get after it, boy. And Southerners.
Well, I call me bigoted and prejudiced and provincial, but I've seen the elite, the Jews and the elite WASP who run society. I don't think any backwards preacher is going to defeat them.
These aren't backwards preachers. They are very
backwards preachers.
These guys are very charismatic. But, Brad, come on, get in here.
Okay, I got a lot to say about this. And you started off. I believe you started off this segment on Christianity with that song, and we've had a big discussion here whether Christianity is racial or not, or whether Christianity is opposed to racial. But, you know, I don't think you can reduce Christianity totally to the racial issue. And let me give you a vivid example that's stuck in my mind. Well, it was about a month or two ago. I had gone to town. I was going to the gym, and I had left my wallet on the top of my truck at the gas station. I had got gas, and I had took off with my wallet on the top of my truck, right? And it fell off, and I didn't know I was missing it at the time. So I go to the gym downtown, and I come out of the gym, and I look for my wallet, and, you know, I can't find it. And I thought someone had, a nigger had broken my truck or something and stole it because the door was open. And I was convinced, you know, some damn nigger, when I was working out at the gym, had gone in there and stole my wallet. And I was furious. I was about to fly off the handle. Anyway, a few days go by, and I get a message, and I think, you know, I'm having to go get all my stuff replaced, my driver's license. I had all kinds of stuff in there. Well, anyway, a few days go by, and I get a message on Facebook from this guy in town, And apparently, after I had pulled out of the gas station, this guy, his name is Mark. He was a perfect stranger to me. He was on his way back from church that day. It was a Sunday, and he saw my wallet. He saw my wallet fall off the top of the truck, and it fell off in the middle of the road. So he stopped and pulled over on the side of the road, and got out in the middle of traffic, and picked up all my my money's flying everywhere, my driver's license, all my personal information. He's in the middle of traffic, picking up all my stuff, and this guy. He asks everybody he knows if they know me. He calls the he gets my debit card and calls the bank trying to find out my location, and he finally, as a last resort, gets on Facebook and anyway, he gets in touch with me, and he's like, you know, was on the way back from church and I saw, you know, what happened, and I got your wallet, man, just come get it. And the next day went there and I got it, and I tried to give him some money, and he wouldn't take it. The way he put it to me is, and the way this guy put this Christian put it to me is, like, you know, God wants us to be our brother's keeper, and I was just looking out for you because I know someone like you would probably look out for me. And it was and that hit home with me. Now, in terms of Christians I've known, there's been so many times around here. I've slid off in a ditch. One time on my way back from college, I slid off on a ditch, and some guy stopped and pulled me off the side of the road. I love my Christian neighbors. I know I can rely on those if the shit hits.
But Brad, why are you attributing what they did to their being Christians?
We'll get to that. Let me talk. But anyway. I think of who can, you know, if suppose there was a collapse that these white nationalists are always talking about. Now, who do you think, if you live in Mississippi or Alabama like I do, who do you think you could count on? Would it be our white Christian neighbors, the kind of guy who would stop in the middle of traffic and recover a stranger's wallet and turn down money? He didn't even take the money. He stopped and we wouldn't even let me pay him. Is that the kind of people we can count on in an emergency? Shit hit the fan. Let's suppose the EBT card stopped working and blacks rioted. Who do you think you could count on in an emergency situation? And I would say my white Christian neighbors is who I can count on. That's who I trust in an emergency situation. Now, and this gets into what I was going to say. Now, I have to ask, you know, What about
Brad? Don't you think you could trust your black Christian neighbors also? More blacks are Christian than whites are.
We're going to get to all of that. But anyway, I try to think
better get to it, because that's a pretty significant problem with what you're saying.
I have a lot here I'm going to cover, and we'll get to this. But anyway, I try to think of who are the most who can't I rely on in my community. I try to think, and you know, I was an atheist for a long time, and I got to know a lot of atheists. And one thing you notice about atheists is that they're some of the most disagreeable, individualist, self-centered people around. This is about the last person you could ever rely on in a crisis situation. The next thing I was going to say turns back to VNN Forum. And I will openly say that I prefer my white Christian neighbors here, and that's who I can rely on. Now, let me ask you something. We had a... one of the exchanges over at VNN Forum was about that guy, Craig Cobb and Carl Garst. And I haven't talked to Carl Garst. But, you know, here's someone who comes down and says, oh, well, I'm your racial brother. And according to this Carl Garst guy, this guy, Craig Cobb, ends up pulling a 45 on him. And I ask, could I trust someone like Craig Cobb in an emergency situation, or could I trust these people who live in my own area? I think the people who live in my own area, even though they're not in the white nationalist movement, I think they have my back. That's who I can count on in a crisis situation. Now, we talked about, is Christianity compatible with racialism? Well, you know, I'm sitting here in Alabama, and I live, you know, in the very center of what was the most successful racialist, race-based society in the history of the world. We had we were a race-based society for three centuries here, and we didn't even give up that. We didn't even, you know, Christianity was used to justify slavery and segregation, and we didn't give up either without a fight. Now, these people, and we go, and let's look at atheists, okay? Can we count on the atheist? Well, if you actually pull out any data and look at what atheists believe, if you look at the election from the last election, you'll see that the Jews here in the South are more conservative than the Northeastern atheists are by like something like 20 or 30 points. These Northeastern atheists were 20 or 30 points to the left of the Jews in the Northeast. I mean, and there's so many things we can get here. If you look at Christianity, take the Southern Baptists. They discovered that racism was a sin around 1995. You know, I was about 15 years old when the Southern Baptists actually figured out that Christianity was against racism. And the Southern Baptists were the last mainstream institution in the whole United States to buy into this crap. They were the last. Now, the very first places which drove all this was the newspapers, the magazines. It was the and especially the secular universities. It was the secular universities that were taken over and captured, and have been leading this crap throughout the 60s. That was going on 30 or 40 years before the Southern Baptists finally threw in the towel and jumped on board with this. The mainstream culture. And what it tells me is that Christianity in the South did not drive our cultural decline. It was imposed from the outside by people who don't share our culture. Now,
it wasn't able to resist it though either.
Hold on a second. Now you
That's
say we didn't. No, we actually voted against. We overwhelmingly voted against the Civil Rights Act. But it was the people in the Northeast who voted not. These people, you say they're the same as us. These people in the Northeast. We already talked about homosexuality. Every single congressman in the Northeast voted to repeal "Don't Ask, Don't Tell." They've all like bought into gay marriage. They opposed every civil rights law in American history has been imposed on these people, on us, by these people. Now,
LBJ wasn't one of those people.
LBJ was doing nothing. He had no support in the South. He was doing the bidding of the Northern Democratic Party. Something like 95% of Northern Democrats supported the Civil Rights Act of 64. And let's not even reduce Christianity to the race issue. Look at gay marriage. Look at feminism. Look at abortion. There's all kinds of other issues where Christianity is the deciding factor. I mean, we've already talked about the fags. Well, go out in San Francisco. And look, you know, Christianity has been defeated in San Francisco. Has San Francisco been improved? And just look at Jim lives in Mississippi. Mississippi is the most religious state in the entire country, and it is also the most racial state. Now go to Vermont. Vermont is the least Christian state in America, and it's also the least racial. Now we look at this stuff in. You go back and you look through the demographic data, and you'll see of the entire white population, one of the only besides the only group of the white population that's more leftist, that's more liberal than the homosexual, that it's, the homosexuals are number one, but atheists are number two. And so of course, you know, the Jews support atheism because wherever the atheists are concentrated in the north, whether it be the Northeast or the West Coast, that's the areas where the Jews are the most successful. In places like Connecticut, for example, which is one of the least religious states, you got two Jewish senators. In New York, you got Chuck Schumer. California has two Jewish senators. How many Jewish senators are there in the South? Well, there's zero. How many Jews?
But wait, the South would be voting for them. They just don't live down there. That's the only difference. Where they do live, the South's happy to vote for them, like Eric Cantor or Ross Leighton in Florida. And the senators you do vote for are perfectly happy to support Israel and warmongering even more than the North.
Miami is
not that big of a deal.
You mentioned Eric Cantor. He was the only Jew in Congress, I believe, that voted against the DREAM Act in 2010, whereas every single Eric Cantor, the Jew in Virginia, voted against the DREAM Act for illegal aliens, whereas in the Northeast, every congressman from New England went out and supported the Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal, and every single congressman in the Northeast, I think except one, went out and voted for the DREAM Act, too.
So yeah, the Northeast is more liberal than the South. But there's still all Christians up there.
There's a reason for that. If you look, a sailor posted the data the other day. There's a reason why the Northeast is so much more liberal than the South, and the reason is that the whites in the Northeast are so much less religious than the ones in the South. Atheism. If you look at the Northeast, where there's more atheists than there are in the South, has atheism improved the Northeast? Is there more racialism in Vermont? Is there more racialism in Massachusetts? Is there more racialism in Washington, which just approved gay marriage? I would say no. And there's all kinds of Christianity. The Christians in the South were so far to the right, you know, that they used Christianity to justify slavery. And they fought. And you say that Christians don't fight back. Well, look at the Confederacy. The bloodiest war in our history was fought by Christians opposing all these fanatics in the Northeast. And now that's
yeah. But the fanatics were also using the Bible to justify it. Christianity took both sides of a question and was wrong on both. That's how incredibly awful that book is.
But Alex, I want to slow down here just a bit because what Brad.
I'd like a chance to respond to some of that.
What I want first is for Brad to repeat it slowly.
Is it going over in your system?
No, I just want to emphasize and underscore what he just said. Say it again, Brad.
Jim, if you live in Mississippi, go
back to your immediate last point about the Civil War and how we fought for it, and how we that part.
Oh yeah, I think I posted an excerpt on my site it was on VNN Forum where I was posting excerpts from what they were saying back then, and they were saying that God wanted them to overthrow Reconstruction, and God wanted them to go fight for the Confederacy to fight off these immoral Yankees who were trying to abolish slavery and impose black rule on the South. In the South, in the war between the states, it was seen as godless Yankees who were obsessed with all these liberal abstractions like equality and liberty and stuff, and these people had lost their minds, and it was our Christian. Now, if you go back and you look at here's something that's very relevant to our situation. In Mississippi, where the Yankees imposed a black government on Mississippi
Just slow down just a bit, Brad. Just slow down.
Right. In Mississippi, the Yankees, after the war between the states, imposed a black majority government on Mississippi for like 10 years. And then the Christians got together through their churches, and they formed an organization called the White Line. And the White Line went out in Mississippi and physically occupied polling places and overthrew the government in 1875. And these people, it was called the Redemption Movement. And the reason it was called the Redemption Movement is because it was all bound up in Christianity. And these people, these racialists in Mississippi, thought it was their Christian duty to throw out the Yankee carpetbaggers who had imposed black majority rule on Mississippi. So when Alex says that Christianity and racialism are necessarily opposed, I mean, there's nothing in the history of where I live in Alabama. Where you live.
Let me, Alex, paraphrase what he's saying. Here in Mississippi, everybody's a Christian. Nobody's not a Christian. I mean, if you're not a Christian, you're not a nice person. You're not an honest person. You're not a good person. It's a de facto. Everybody in Mississippi is a Christian. Now, I don't want to get a hotbed going here about y'all's forum members because I've got issues with both of them. But I want to kind of – we've got like 15 or so minutes left in this particular session. I want to come back – and I'd like to do it on a Sunday if it's okay with y'all, if y'all are up to that. This coming Sunday, the Lord's Day, goodness gracious, after church lets out, 1 o'clock on Sunday. Does that work for you, Alex?
No, not for me.
What? How about Saturday?
It's got to be in a weekday for me.
Weekday? Well, then it's got to be – you can't – how about a week from today then, Monday, 1 o'clock? Brad?
Yeah, that works fine. I like to. I actually like 2 o'clock even better.
I end up liking 2 better as well. How about 2 o'clock next Monday, Brad?
Sounds good.
Okay. All right. Alex, we're going to let you get into this, but in Mississippi, everybody's a Christian. The thing I started to say about these forum members, and the way I want to kind of get y'all at least start broach this in terms of a strategy and tactics for whites in North America, I want to hear in a nutshell both of y'all's. And clearly, part of your strategy, Alex, is to attack Christianity, which I don't get, because there's got to be some kind of draw. And say in Mississippi, unless you want to rule out practically 99.9% of everybody here, you ain't going to get there talking bad about Christianity. So
except the Jews do, and the Mississippi boys run off to fight their wars.
That's
Jews attack Christianity every day around the clock, and Jews run the society, and Jews get their agenda pushed through, and the people of Mississippi are seen as the most backwards people in the world.
Zionism rules the state with an iron fist right now. No argument.
Yeah, that's because they're, along with this religion comes anti-intellectualism, hatred of thought, which is what the hatred of atheism represents. And boom, if you don't like how things are going, it's because you're Christian that they're there.
Well, the atheists are just...
Let me address that point on atheism. First of all, atheism is a rejection of a single assertion. It's not a school. When you compare atheism and Christianity, you're comparing apples and oranges. This is an important thing to understand. An atheist, by virtue of the fact he proves he rejects the Christian assertion of a God or someone else's assertion of a God, it's not true. There's no word for people who don't believe in Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny. There's only a word for this because so many people do believe and accept that assertion. So the atheist, by rejecting that, proves he's generally of a superior intelligence. Atheists are not dumb people. The dumber a man is, the more likely he's religious. What happens to people who are more intelligent? More of them go to college. What do we know from studies? The more people go to college, the more liberal they become. The mere fact a man rejects one false assertion doesn't mean he doesn't fall for something else. And they go to college, they become more liberal. That's why they're voting more liberal. But they're not a specific group of people, because the only thing that unifies them, unless they formally go out and join a group, is that they reject this one assertion of a God.
Now, the people who
claim that name, I'm an atheist, and yet I'm a racist, revolutionary, whatever. But most people who are atheists don't join political groups based on their rejecting that Christian assertion.
Alex, how many?
A tiny subset of people.
Alex, how many of our American revolutionaries were atheists, and how many of them were Christians?
They were. I got to answer that a different way. They were basically deists, which said, "Okay, maybe God invented the universe, but he doesn't have anything to do with it after that point."
You're saying
I don't know if you could consider that a proto-atheist, or you could consider that a proto-secular humanist or a liberal progressive or whatever.
George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, all them boys that signed the Constitution, they were all deists.
Pretty much is my understanding.
Some of them were.
How many of them were?
Some of them probably had more religious belief. But the point is that you have all these professional conservatives running around the country basically claiming that our founders were these hidebound, backward... Southern right, ignoramus.
Another question. Another question.
Far from the truth.
Another question. Alex. One second, Brad. Alex, how about Hitler? Is he an atheist?
I don't know what Hitler actually believed. Hitler had other, just like Golden Dawn today, he had all kinds of other battles. Eventually, what they wanted to do was kind of eclipse or Nordicize the Christian church, or Rosenberg wanted to prune it of its Semitic elements and Nordicize it, which I think is a ridiculous project. I'm inclined to believe Hitler believed the same thing, but that wasn't their main thing. So I don't know what Hitler actually believed.
He didn't touch it.
In practical terms, he was not a Christian.
I have it from a high authority that when a plank was suggested to put into that 25 plank, I believe they had 25 planks in the NS deal, that there was no mention of religion whatsoever. He didn't attack Christianity the way you are. He didn't touch it.
No, it wasn't. Now,
and I'm just trying to understand why you've got it right and he had it wrong.
Well, the reason I get it right is because I have his example to draw from. The churches were undermining him. If anything, he was not harsh enough against the churches. They did institute some control measures, but you still had all kinds of Catholics and Protestants who were not only working with the Jews, but they were deliberately preaching against him and his racial doctrine of, hey, we got to protect Germany from these Jewish communists before they set up the same thing here they did over there. So, yeah, I don't think he was hard enough on the church. That's what he got wrong.
Well,
wrong.
Alex, don't the Jews aren't the Jews and the homosexuals mostly in agreement with you on atheism? Don't if you go to any atheist community on the internet, won't you see that?
Like I said, atheism is it's basically nothing except a rejection of one assertion. The only thing atheists have in common is that they're generally more intelligent than Christians.
The thing is you're saying that if Christians became
atheism is not a it's not a political position to reject that God exists when there's been no evidence asserted that he does.
There's no evidence that atheism is improving people. If there's anything is true,
atheism isn't a thing. That's the point. It's not a system of belief. It's not anything except rejecting one assertion. You're associating it with a bunch of other stuff that it doesn't have anything to do with. How can I be an atheist then and not be a left-wing radical Jew?
Because
you don't believe in God. It doesn't mean you accept socialism or anything else like that, or homosexuality.
I'm not saying that all atheists have the same political views. I'm saying that as a group, atheists are to the left of the Jews. Only the homosexuals are more liberal.
And
than
I'm
the
saying
atheists.
Atheism is not a group.
But Alex, wouldn't you? What about this? Isn't atheism really untenable? I mean, what evidence do you have that God does not exist?
I'm not going to get into that. So that's a ridiculous argument. The point that we ought to be focusing on is why, if Christians are 95% of a society, can they not defend themselves against the Jews?
That's what matters. To me, what matters is trying to be say something that makes sense. Now, when you say
– I just said something that makes sense, respond to it. The Christians are the 95% majority. Why can't you dominate society? Why are you continually dominated, head-on harassed, and used as sidedogs by the Jews and the homosexuals? If you have something good, why can't you defend yourself?
I have a response to that, and the response is that there was an atheist country. It was called the Soviet Union, and I believe it was dominated by the Jews, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's a good
historical. Yes, it certainly was. It was set up by Jewish gangsters, basically. Yeah, a lot of them were atheists, but atheism and Jew doesn't mean anything. They reject God, whatever.
To me, that's one heck of an argument right there, Soviet Union. I mean,
they were racial Jews. That's what mattered. Whether they believed in God or not, who cares? Yeah, they didn't like the white majority. That's what they were going after, and they trashed a lot of churches.
Wherever atheism is strong, the Jews seem to be like more successful. You look at the Soviet Union. You look at Vermont.
America's the most Christian country in the world, and the Jews are strongest here. So that's the correct association.
In the Northeast,
Christians are strong. Jews are stronger.
In the Northeast, where Christianity is the weakest, the Jews are the strongest there.
Christianity is not weak in the Northeast. It's just a type that you don't want to admit. Is you don't want to call it Christianity, but it is Christianity.
It is,
and they're actually more moral individually than most Southerners are. That's the irony of the whole thing. When they measure divorce and stuff like that, the Northeast ranks ahead of the South.
Alex,
you're not giving your enemies the virtue. You're not granting them their real virtues. You're just looking at saying they're bad. They're hurting us, but you're not. You show no interest in understanding them and how they are continually able to ride herd on you and defeat you. And I'm telling you why that is.
I read these people every day.
Why can't your people defend themselves? In part because they're religious and anti-intellectual.
We voted against the Civil Rights Act, but in the Northeast they voted, 95% of you voted for it. So even though we overwhelmingly vote against the Civil Rights Act, even though we overwhelmingly voted against every civil rights law, all the immigration laws, and even though we voted overwhelmingly against Obama twice, there's more of you than us. So when you go out, and
so what are you going to do about it? What can you do about it,
Alex?
This is the whole point. They don't want to let you go. They're based. And come on, all the abolitionists were Christians. You haven't acknowledged that at all. That's what motivated the North. It was this insane version of Christianity. But Christianity can take any form. Basically, Christianity is perfectly happily supporting communism. It did it all throughout Latin America. You're acting like Christianity is basically, this is what I'm saying, is basically pro-white, but it's not. It can be twisted by anyone to support any purpose. That means it's unprincipled. It's not fundamentally good for our race.
The only examples of pro-white societies we have are Christian. The South, you've mentioned South Africa and the South.
Christianity was not what was causing them to be pro-white, because a thousand other white societies were Christian ended up where we are today. The whole West has.
I view
Christianity cannot defend the forces attacking the white race.
Alex.
What's good in the church is white.
Alex,
and what's not white is not good.
Alex, I view whiteness, the white race, and Christianity as one. They're inseparable.
Oh, you're wrong. They are absolute. Come on, Jim. This is an example of backwoods Southern anti-intellectualism, Jim, that you embody. It's the reason I haven't talked to you a lot of times. Now do you physically understand? I mean, all right, I'm going to explain this to you patiently like a small child. There's how many Christians in the world? About what? Couple billion or 1 billion, and the majority of them are not white, and it's only going to be more that way in the future. You see, a Christianity and the white race are one and inseparable. That's garbage.
That's literally not true.
Most Christians are not white.
Alex,
it's a universalist religion.
Your point though doesn't undermine my point. Just because it does. Well,
Christianity and the white race are acceptable. Why does it accept non-white members? Anyone who's not from Mississippi would understand that in a heartbeat.
No. Let me explain it to you.
Understand it.
I can.
Come on, Brad.
Okay. Well, let me reply to that, and I will say that Christianity is a religion that's focused on the salvation of the individual soul, and just because someone can, they're capable of receiving Christian salvation, they're capable of going to heaven, that doesn't mean that everybody in this world is the same. And that's not what Christianity is.
Right,
is
now you're making an intellectual argument that will never, ever prevail over we're all spiritually equal in God's eyes. They will always be able to beat you with that. They're lying and they're demagoguing, but it will always trump. It will always trump your argument, which is correct.
No. For most of the history of Christianity, just because the idea that because Christians are capable of receiving salvation and all Christians are going to heaven, just because
it's too complex.
That doesn't mean that there's no such thing as nations. That doesn't mean that everybody in this world is the same.
You're right. I'm conceding what you're saying, but my point is you won't ever be able to sell that politically in the age of the mass man.
Now, a few Christian sects, heretical sects in the North, they're the ones who started to accept this idea that all Christians in this world are physically equal. Look at the Quakers. And now, when you say that Christian universalism is a threat, if you look at the Quakers, if you look at the Unitarians, if you look at the Northern Baptists and Methodists, then yeah.
Brad, we got three minutes left. I'd like to hear just real, real short from both of you in regard to the right strategy for whites in North America and tactics. So,
Jim, that's not a 3-minute thing.
I know, but we can at least. Just a tease. You said to keep them wanting more.
Okay. Let me sum it up, and then it won't take long. And Brad can finish it up here. What I would do: you form a national party, and you deliberately attack the conservatives and the Christians, and you demonstrate leadership in the street and intellectually. You refuse to be bollocked by someone calling you a racist. You refuse to back down. You elevate and lift the white cause, so that people see that we are the only ones on the right, and that encompasses everyone from Fox News to me, let's say, and you show them that we are the only serious party in the country. You attack and destroy the conservative Christian cultural opposition. You make them laughable by attacking their leaders like Pat Buchanan and Pat Robertson. You say, we are the only ones who are serious about an America for Americans, you know, us white people who founded the country. And at the same time, you polarize the country between whites and Jews, who are the main enemy. So you destroy your enemy inside the right, and you attack the Jews on the left. You polarize society into whites and Jews. And then you have the final battle, and we dominate them and retake the country.
Brad, real quick, what's your summary?
Okay. My strategy is that we need to close the gap between ourselves and our...
Brad, you there? Alex, I think you're still there.
I think you fell out.
Brad, are you still there? I think he's jumping up and down or doing something on his end that just caused
it. Jim, I'd like to reserve that.
Let me finish my closing statement here. I believe that we need to close the gap between ourselves and our own people. I believe I'm a Southern secessionist. I believe we need to secede from the United States and create a Southern ethno-state. I believe it should be called the Republic of Dixie. I think we need to look at what's happening in Catalonia, and we need to draw the right conclusions from that. I think we need a positive message that embraces Christianity and conservatism, and we need to convince the Christian conservative majority that the only way that they can preserve the only way they can ever have a Christian society, a conservative society, a stable society, the kind of society they vote for in every election, is through secession and Southern independence.
Okay, you were saying, Alex.
Oh, I was just saying I would like to go into that question at much greater length, perhaps on the next show.
Next time.
Okay, that sounds mighty good. All right, we're at 2 hours right now, so we'll plan on getting back together again this coming Monday at 2 o'clock Central Standard Time. Sound
okay.
good?
Okay, see you there.
Great.
All right, thank y'all.
See you later.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Jim Giles, and you're listening to Radio Free Mississippi.